Welcome in, Loons fans, to another edition of the Match Week Preview. Jonathan Harrison here alongside Manny Lagos. Manny, how are we doing today? Plenty to discuss on the show, but let's just start off with how you doing.
I'm doing well. I still think that the surreal winter we've had this spring, and I think officially for the first time in a long time, we're having a real spring. So I love getting up. Home game this weekend. The sun is out most of the week. I think it's going to be beautiful in 70 degrees. So I'm just excited. Just nice to have this beautiful weather this early.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it this weekend. Possibly, 70 degrees for Saturday's home game against Houston. Yeah. Going to be outstanding. Let's jump into our early discussion. Let's jump into some CONCACAF Champions Cup action, reviewing last night's games. Three Liga MX teams move on. One MLS team, Columbus Crew, move on in incredible fashion. A penalty kick shootout victory for the Crew, the first one against a Liga MX side, beating Tigres on Tuesday night. What's your thoughts on Columbus being the only MLS team to move on, and how New England and Miami were dispatched yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's an outstanding result for Columbus. Away, you know, giving up kind of a really soft, almost like Miami, early goal, and then just recovering and playing really good, solid soccer for 90 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry, 120 plus minutes. I think that's the type of team we saw last year that really got better as the year went along and deservedly won the MLS Cup, because I do think they were playing the best soccer and probably the best team last year overall. And so credit to Wilfred Nancy right now, that the work he's done and the result to go down there and get through is outstanding. That is not an easy place to play. Tigres has a good mixture of older players, and they bought some players in the offseason. So again, that was just a great result for them. I mean, really, really impressive. So, and then I think New England just had an uphill battle. When you get down, that score was kind of over. So I didn't really follow that one too much. Didn't watch the game. Was expected it to be a tough slog for New England, given that Club America is one of the best, you know, teams in North America. And at home, they're really going to make it hard if you're up by that many goals. And again, I probably even New England mindset is we got to start trying to navigate our league schedule and make sure we're competitive there. So that one for me didn't surprise me. I thought the Miami-Monterrey was unbelievable. You know, again, I think Monterrey is traditionally one of the better teams in North America. And they had an outstanding away win. And then last night, I think it became the margins. You know, the reality is you're playing against one of the better teams traditionally, and against a team like Miami that had their stars out that night and ready to play, but gave up a really soft goal at a bad time in the game and just threw them off. Next thing you know, you're battling, trying to come back from two goals. You now really have to chase the game. Messi's probably still building back into his fitness and sharpness, given that he was out for a long time. So it was a tough night for them ultimately, because I said, you know, going to Monterrey, even down a goal with Messi would have been tough, but down two goals at halftime was really made it a tough match for them.
Can Columbus do it? Can they become the second MLS team to win this tournament after Seattle did it a couple of years ago? They've got a tough road ahead of them, Monterrey, and then whoever wins Pachuca and Club America, that match on the other side of the bracket. It's a tough match, but as we've seen, and as we saw the other night, Columbus Crew, very good, very resilient, very well organized. Can they beat some of the best clubs in Mexico to take home this title?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, I think it's, you know, again, one of the harder things about this competition for us versus the Mexican club is I think one of the qualities of MLS is we're way deeper, I think, overall than League of X. You know, we've got 30 teams that tend to have more parity and compete against each other night in and week in and week out at a pretty darn good level. And really, you know, depending on who gets into the tournament, we're playing as traditionally the top five teams of Mexico almost always. And so for me, I think Columbus is shown a quality that they can at any given time beat anybody, whether it's on one day or if it's a series. So I think they need to take some excitement in taking on Tigres and getting the win there and getting excited about Monterrey now. And Monterrey's outstanding. There's no doubt about it. They are probably the favorites of the tournament. And so they have them in the semifinals, you know, and it's probably a little bit like the Champions League now. A lot of people think the favorite will be whoever wins the Madrid-Man City situation. I just think for Columbus, they might not be the favorites if they win that series, But the mentality has to be, hey, yeah, they're good, but we just beat Tigres already. Let's go after it. So I don't see where there's any reason for them to expect to try to win at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen they have the players to go on these runs. They did last year at the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. So if there's any team that can do it in this year's edition of the Champions Cup, I think they absolutely can. Moving on to Major League Soccer action from the weekend, Philadelphia remain unbeaten, a 2-1 win on the road against Nashville. An impressive start for them, but an even more impressive start, New York Red Bulls. Top of the league, 14 points. Did we expect the Red Bulls to be up there at the top of the league already this early in the season?
I mean, I think we were all looking, what are the Red Bulls going to be? And they clearly are looking at their roster build from the offseason and say, we want to evolve from just this high-press team to add some quality and try to get an element of our defense organization with some attacking players like Forsberg that really shows some intentionality that they're trying to think about how to evolve maybe from just a pure pressing team to now a team that's organized and structured defensively, but has some quality. And you know, it's been an impressive start because I think every game they've shown elements of a team that is really organized, that can attack and can defend. And by going to Cincinnati and getting that result really says that they've had a great start to the season. And they're a team that's really right now looking like they're probably one of the more improved teams from last year.
What is Forsberg do for them up top that they just didn't have before, because he's been an instant impact for them. I mean, he's one of many attackers for that club. That's absolutely just cooking right now. They're doing really well in the attack, which is something I know they've struggled with in the past, but it seems like Forsberg's really been adding something to that squad that just was missing in years past.
Yeah. I think he just adds a little bit of element of creativity, a little bit of element of finding, in between the lines and spots where you get the ball in good spots. He's excited to break lines. He's excited to see how they can go forward and see the game a little bit differently instead of just like trying to press and win the ball and get a chance. And, you know, I think he and Frankie Amaya, who's now slowly, you know, really developing into an offensive threat, mm-hmm. and really at a good phase of his experience level in the league, have shown that they have the ability now to kind of use their kind of mindset from the past and evolve it into a little bit more creative offensively. And Forsberg is going to demand that, just the type of player he is. He's going to want to find the ball in spots and think about the game a little bit differently than just pressing and winning balls and trying to get a chance.
So then while Red Bulls sit up top of the Eastern Conference and are a little bit of a surprise there, the other surprise in the Western Conference, now Vancouver sits on top of the Western Conference. And there are some questions about the toughness of their schedule, and their head coach, Vanni Sartini, said as much in his post-game press conference or his comments last week after their 4-0 win against Toronto. But still, this early in the season and performing as well as they have throughout the season, you can't really take much away from them. You can't take where they are away from them, even if their schedule is questionable at this point.
Well, I mean, listen, they're in the West. They're top. They just beat their Canadian rivals 4-0, full stop.
Yeah.
Great start to the season. Full stop. They're there for a reason right now. You know, they've started to make that place a really tough place to play. They seem to really, you know, put teams under a lot of pressure at home, and they found a way to kind of grind out some points on the road. So they've done the formula really well to start the season, and credit to them.
Yeah, absolutely. At the bottom of the Western Conference, though, Seattle continue to sit there. 5 points on the season so far, sitting in 12th place. They're a better team than sitting 12th place in the West, right? They're going to charge up throughout the season, or are they?
Well, I mean, they was at 5-0 was their last result. And so I think that shows that, you know, they really kind of stopped their dropping points at home.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in fashion. To me, I don't know yet. At the end of the day, these are the kind of weeks and months where you really start to learn what you are and what you're not, and then you have to adapt to compete and get points. And so most of the teams in the league, including us, are at a point where, you know, you're either, you know, you're in a place like, hey, we've done some really good stuff, but there's areas where we need to get better, and we have to embrace that and really roll up our sleeves and do the work. And I would be cautious to say, yeah, I agree. In the past, Seattle's been outstanding at recovering and showing that they've been kind of one of the quads of the league, but they have to go through that same process like all the teams. And so they've done a great job of recalibrating with a great home win. I do want to see how they kind of evolve from that and continue to have that kind of level that they played with against Montreal.
The other notable game from the weekend, LAFC 2, LA Galaxy 1, all three goals scored in the first, 36 minutes of this match. And the most questionable one was the final one, Denny Bawanga drawing a penalty. And I just want to start off the conversation here on this match. Before we get into the nickname conversation of it, which we brought up on the broadcast on Saturday, was it a penalty for Denny Bawanga or was it a bit of a dive?
100% dive. So disappointed in VAR. Just disappointing because, again, I think VAR does a better job than people realize. And, and then, you know, we sometimes forget about how many calls they get right. And we just kind of move on and we forget the ones they get right. And then we kind of do this, which would accentuate the ones they're wrong. But I just, as a former player, the soccer fan, I don't usually go this route, but obviously for them, it was a big rivalry game and you want the referees to not be the focus or you know, make those calls. And I'm not even ripping on them to say that referees don't make mistakes, but just as a soccer fan and a former player, it's just such a bad call. Like it just really was disappointing for me. And I thought when I was watching it, I thought for sure VAR would pick it up and, you know, I'm not blaming the referee for calling when he did. Bawanga's crazy fast, crazy smart, crazy skilled. But when you look and just how he went to go find the contact and really, I am as harsh as anybody about defenders going down in the box and understanding that they might get a PK if they do that. I was a former coach. It's one of the things that I pretty much, you know, like just hammered into my defenders. Like, listen, this is 95% of the time it's your fault, even if you don't foul. This one, it sat wrong with me. You know, again, I thought it was one of those ones where I thought VAR could have done a much better job.
Yeah, I'm usually a big proponent of VAR. I mean, I like bringing the technology in the game. I understand the complaint that it might slow it down. But so far in the 3-4 years we've had it in Major League Soccer, I can't remember too many instances where I've left a game thinking, man, that game went on really long because VAR just took too dang long to make that call. It just feels like they've got a good enough system and they kind of work it out. They've worked it out where it is a fast enough system where it's not an issue. It's just getting these calls right. And there are moments like these in the Denny Bawanga instance in this game against LAFC and LA Galaxy, where you question, like, why wasn't it used in this moment? Why didn't we go to it? We have the technology to get these calls right. We should be doing it every time. And in a game as big as that one, the magnitude that surrounds that game, and an early season tilt against these two clubs, you want to get these calls right. And I just don't understand why it wasn't looked at.
No, so, John, it was looked at. I mean, every PK is looked at in VAR.
Yeah.
It's if there's a goal or a PK, VAR literally looks at that and it decides to have the referee go see it. I think this one, the referee, I even went to go see it, if I can remember correctly. It just, like I said, sometimes taking a breath and taking the VAR is good because you're like, oh, my God, I get why the ref didn't see it, but come on. And for me, this was just 100% not a PK. I thought it was a yellow card for Bawanga. And again, I'm not. It's part of the game. It's part of the scene that you're going to get stuff wrong. You know, again, this is a system that we're trying to be better, but it still has human error to it. And I was disappointed for such a rivalry game to have such a big call impact the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you can see it on the replay where he's just Bawanga's going and searching out for that contact of that leg that you can tell the defender dove in knowing that he could contact him, but realizes once the ball gets away from him, he can't get him. So he pulls his legs back as much as he could. And I think it was a disappointing instance of VAR not overturning that one.
I think the Galaxy looked pretty good though. I thought they did pretty well.
Once again,
it was like, I think these raffle, the Trafico games have been really, really, really impressive derbies in our league over the last couple of years.
Wow, you brought up the name, so now we got to jump into this conversation. A funny instance happened on the broadcast on Saturday where we started our second segment. You popped in a couple minutes in after Dan and I just spent probably two, three minutes ragging on the name of El Trafico because I'm not a big fan of it. Dan likes to rib me for not liking it or some of the other intricacies that I like and dislike about certain things. And one of those is El Trafico. I'm not a big fan of it. I think it's kind of cheesy, but you came in shortly after not knowing that we had just had that conversation, saying you like it and think it's one of the better nicknamed rivalries in the league. So we met up in the press box afterwards, and I told you I'd come up with some other names. I'd search across world soccer to come up with some other names that I like better. And unfortunately, Manny, I could only come up with one because there are just not a lot of creativity in some of these nicknames in world soccer, unfortunately.
What was the one?
It's in Greece, the Derby of Eternal Enemies between Panathinaikos and Olympiakos. That's just that's a great nickname for a rivalry.
Yes.
And it tells you what's going to happen and what those two clubs fight for, as opposed to just every other big rivalry in every country being called El Clasico.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, that's why I like the nickname, because it's a take on El Clasico. It's a take on maybe my Barcelona Real Madrid fandom of that rivalry. And I think the early days of the league when you had the LA teams being the Galaxy and San Jose, which I played for San Jose. So I just thought it had a little bit of flavor. And then, you know, if you have lived in California, in LA, there's some frustrating times in traffic that I've had in my lifetime there. So it hits well for me.
After doing some research on nicknames of rivalries across world soccer, I may have to turn around my opinion on where I settle El Tráfico.
Come on, John. I'm going to get you on board. I like it.
I think I'll still call it the LA Derby on broadcast, but for the most part.
We're good. That's what this is all about.
Warmer weather means green grass and plenty of soccer. Starting in May, Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps throughout the spring and summer months. Come enjoy the game, demonstrate your skills, and take your game to the next level with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the Camps and Combines page on MNUFC.com for more information. All right, so let's jump into the Real Salt Lake match. This one was exciting. I loved this match, going back and watching it, and then obviously being in the stadium for a number of reasons. It's one of my favorite matches of the season, but I just got to give a shout out to club defender Zarek Valentin. Wasn't able to play on Saturday, so he decided to jump up in the booth with us, with Dan Terrar and myself, for the broadcast, and he was excellent. We put out the clip of the goal call on social media. It's great. Go view it. It's on my Twitter feed. But it's excellent. Minnesota United retweeted it as well. It's an excellent goal call by Dan. But the excitement that Zarek Valentin brought throughout the broadcast, the knowledge, it was simply outstanding. He did an excellent job. Credit to him. If that's his first time in the booth, he's got a future in this once his playing days are done, because he was incredible and didn't really need much coaching from us. He was outstanding. So good job for him. But let's jump into this match. This was an exciting match, and I liked it. It was very back and forth, and I think Minnesota were definitely the better team on the night.
First of all, I agree that Zarek, outstanding player. I mean, he's just really, over the years, really one of those guys who's gotten the most out of who he is and what he does, both on and off the field, the kind of leader he is, the kind of mentality he takes into the practice, into games, and even being somebody who's asked to kind of help in our broadcast. I see only great things for Zarek when he's done playing. I see only big things for him to be a great contributor for our leadership and our team as he gets healthy. And I'm not surprised by, what he does. So, and I'm not surprised that he did such a good job in the booth as well. So, Jonathan, this is a good one for me to push back.
Okay.
Because I want to get there with you. I'm not sure I could put this in the outstanding game category.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a solid game, and I love that maybe you had the tactical mind to, really dive into the challenges, because it was, there was some lot of tactics, but I thought it was a little bit sluggish overall of a game, from chances created and really our own ability to get after and create a lot of chances. So I was a little bit, certainly very happy with our second half and the change from the first half, but I thought we had a little bit of a slow start in that first half.
Yeah, I think the squad started out slow, and that obviously led to Real Salt Lake scoring in the 24th minute, where it felt like up until that goal, Real Salt Lake were really piling on a lot of pressure on Minnesota, and they're struggling to get it out of their own half. And Real Salt Lake were attacking the goal right in front of the Wonderwall, which from the broadcast standpoint is literally just right in front of Dan and I. So we didn't really have to turn our heads too far to look at Minnesota, unfortunately, through that first half to see them attacking the Real Salt Lake net. But it just felt like for much of that first half, or the first 24 minutes until that goal, Minnesota were pinned back and Real Salt Lake were doing a really good job of making Minnesota suffer through the first 24 minutes up until that Chicho Arango goal.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what I mentioned. I thought the first half was a slow start for us. Now, first 24 minutes, particularly Gomez had an outstanding kind of – actually, had an outstanding game. You know, he hit the post in the second half. But, you know, that assist he made wasn't the first time he was starting to really kind of press and win the ball in good spots. And he created another chance for Chicho, I think, earlier in the half. And Ojeda was really good in that first half. You know, he did a really good job of pressing out of the middle and winning some balls in a good spot. And again, Arango's probably the hottest forward in the league. And, you know, that goal was in some senses easy, but if you really look again, his ability to see the opening, attack the ball, the technique down and in to give Dane no chance to save it. I think you're right. I think that was not tough, but just 25 minutes where I don't think we were expecting them to come out that aggressive, and a credit to them. And I think it took us a little while to get back into it. And certainly by the end of the first half, I think we were back into creating some chances, and then a great response where I think we played much better in the second half.
The thing that really surprised me about how Salt Lake played in that first half was how much they focused on getting the ball onto Gomez's foot on that right side, really attacking Josef Rosales and Devin Pedelford on that side of the Loons defense. There was a stat, I think, on the Apple broadcast. I don't remember the exact numbers, but they showed the amount of the percentage of times that the ball was on the left, right, and center of the pitch when Real Salt Lake were attacking. And it was over 50% on the right-hand side for Real Salt Lake in the first half. And it felt like that was the continued effort throughout the rest of the match as well. But the sheer amount that they focused on attacking Rosales and Pedelford on that right-hand side, it was really striking how often they just decided, we're going to avoid Diego Luna on the left-hand side. We're going to avoid trying to work it through the left-hand side. We're going to particularly attack Rosales and Pedelford. Is that because they saw Pedelford play kind of out of position in Philadelphia, though he did play well? He played well again, it felt like, on Saturday, and we can talk about that more as well. But is that because they noticed that there's a guy playing out of position, there's some change in that back line, or is there a specific reason why a team would focus so heavily on one side of the field?
Yeah, no, I think it had to do a little bit more of the aggressive early pressing and winning the ball in good spots. And to be honest, I still think Diego Lunas is one of those guys that was not going to like run in behind you. He's going to come in the middle a bit more and combine. And then when that happens, either the outside back for RSL gets forward, the left back, or the ball gets recirculated to where the numbers need to shift over quickly, was on the right, and they had a little bit of speed. So to me, it was a little bit of a combination of their ability to aggressively press and make it, you mentioned it, make it hard for us to get out. And combined with, I think Diego really tends to like to use his skill to come inside versus running behind. And then that just kind of created the 2v2s in that space against Josef and Gomez and Brody, who's a really smart outside back. I mentioned he gets forward well. So for me, I think, like I said, I think Gomez really put in a great shift, and the assist was outstanding.
Yeah.
In that first half. Well, we weren't bad either, by the way. We still had good possession. We still moved the ball and dealt with them pretty darn well. I thought Dane's save early on about the 10th minute was really good. It was a better save than people realize. And I think he had a very good day overall. And Dane's really started the season sharply and well. And again, for me, I liked the day because we did suffer a little bit. And, you know, we didn't suffer for large amounts, but just a little bit. And then we had to recalibrate. And sometimes you can't just flip and recalibrate right away and just start playing great. It took us a while to build up to get to a place where in the second half, I thought we really started to take over possession and create chances, and it led to our momentum to score.
It felt like that started to build up after the goal went in. It felt like something switched for Minnesota United, where at the end of the first half, when the whistle was blown for halftime, we all kind of looked at each other in the booth and we're like, man, if you give us five more minutes, there's a goal going in for Minnesota because of the pressure that they were piling on Real Salt Lake in the latter portions of that first half. They obviously carried it over into the second half and eventually scored later on. But it felt like that started to build up almost shortly after the goal went in by Arango.
Yeah, I like I said, I would hope we respond at home, particularly to not start maybe as aggressive as we wanted to. Again, not poor, but I thought, we created some nice chances. Sangbin obviously had the really good chance with the save. And again, I think for us, you know, the goal will be to have a little bit more of a complete 90 minutes where we don't get caught, whether it's behind or whether it's just with the slow start. But that's, like I said, that's part of the game. You're going to get punched sometimes. You're going to get where you have a game plan and then you have to recalibrate. And I thought within the game itself, the team and the staff recalibrated well. And like I said, I think that second half, Braun coming on had some really good minutes and really good tempo of really kind of moving the ball around. Caden Clark came on as a sub and really had some key passes that, you know, created some stress on them and allowed us to get numbers forward. So there were some nice pieces there that really led to us, I think, creating chances and justifiably tying, but maybe even deserving the win.
Yeah, I think that's how we all ended the match as well, is thinking that it felt like Minnesota should have had more goals. I mean, they had a number of shots, if I'm remembering. It's over 20 shots total on the match, 26 with 7 on target. It felt like, especially with how the second half played out, with how well Robin Lode played on the day, it felt like there was more goals in that match for Minnesota. But Zach McMath just absolutely was a wall on Saturday and just really stonewalled Minnesota's chances in getting all 3 points. But I think that match with Tani's goal, and we can talk about that in a second, that match really shows the importance of continuing to fight. And that's, as we've mentioned a couple times throughout the year already, that's been the theme of this club this season, and it doesn't seem like that's letting up anytime soon.
Yeah, I was encouraged, and it sets up a great, and I know we'll talk in a few minutes about the matchup at home, but certainly making sure we're walking off the field not losing and making a point, and obviously we'd like three, but you know, the home play so far is had some nice elements of fight and battle, and you know, us really, you know, having some nice special moments at the end of these games is really fun. And so for me, really impressed with the guys dealing with the adversity. Again, it's not always easy adversity. It's not always going to be how you want it to go. But like I said, I think the response from the first half to the second and the overall kind of ability to still possess a lot when you're not playing as well or creating chances you would like is really impressive. So, and I think you just highlighted that leads to the goal. I think Robin's game, you know, all game, he was very dangerous. He was in good spots. He was moving the ball. He was finding ways to really create good opportunities for the team. And, you know, that play where we scored, you know, it started from pretty good buildup on the left and a good cross that, you know, they had to deal with. So they were a little bit out of their shape. And I thought Robin just did a great job of, you know, kind of taking what looked like an innocuous pass from DJ. And I love how players kind of dip their shoulder and change direction so quickly where the defender can't see it. And it was one of those plays where, you know, 9 times out of 10, a defender should definitely cover the inside and like make Robin go backwards no matter what.
Yeah.
But Robin's just ability to shift his weight and shift his body so quickly, it really was a great move where it just fooled the defender and put them on the back end. And Tani's canny ability to be there and really read Robin's movement of it was really impressive. Like I said, it really was kind of a really clever goal by the two of them.
Yeah, that turn by Robin to basically get to be able to run towards the end line, have that little space open up for him was incredible. And then Tani just poking the ball into the back of the net. Remembering back on the second half, there was a number of those chances where low driving cross in and Zach McMath has to dive to the ground to try and get it. And there's a Loons player just inches away from taking it off of Zach McMath's hands and pushing it in the back of the net. And then it was Tani doing it in the 87th minute. Incredible effort from him. And he continues to prove and continues to show the development that he made last year in San Antonio, and just continues to prove that he really is coming into his form as a true striker.
Yeah, so fun. So fun to see him being ready to come onto the field, being ready to make a difference. There's no doubt, you know, we've hit some adversity at home now, being down late twice and finding goal to get a point out of the games is outstanding. And again, it was a great moment for him, but it's also, you know, really a testament to his, you know, ability to really embrace his role right now and being a part of the group and needing help and needing ideas in terms of how we're going to get back in the game. And he was part of a great group that really found a way to get a point in the game.
So then that brings us now to the part of the discussion where we preview coming up on Saturday's match against Houston Dynamo. Another tough one, only these two teams.
Hey Jonathan, real quick, I think we should just address with the group, the red card.
Oh yeah. I almost forgot about that.
You know, I think, you know, it was one that the way the MLS works and obviously, you know, we can appeal yellow and red cards. Sorry, red cards. We cannot appeal yellow cards, but we can technically appeal second yellow cards. The challenge for me here was, you know, there's, I think for the sporting staff, not me, is that it was one of those ones where there was a little bit of contact and probably not enough to ask the ref to overturn their decision on a yellow. There's no doubt if that was a straight red, it would be easily overturned. I don't think there's any way there. And then you're probably looking at a referee that probably could have taken a deep breath and kind of realized, where is Joseph? Does he have a yellow card? Doesn't he? It was a little bit of a down point, I think, for me in the game, because I think we were really excited for those last 5 minutes to really see if we go ahead and get the winner. And I think he kind of affected those last 5 minutes quite a bit by just trying to resolve settling down in the box by giving a yellow card without maybe realizing that the player he's doing that with already had a yellow card.
Right.
And I think the broadcasters had said that as well. And Apple, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but it was a really unfortunately harsh one, and it does affect the game this weekend because he's suspended.
Yeah. I think at the moment during when it happened, we all felt it was soft, the yellow. We understood looking back at the replay, the arms extended, did push him to the ground, understandably a yellow, but when it's the second yellow, you would think you would have to take a second, as you said, take a deep breath, think who it's being called on, and just think how that's going to affect the game and how it's being played at the time. So yeah, I think for me, I think it's a little bit of a soft yellow, but I understand. I mean, the arms were extended, did push him. You would want to normally call that a yellow, but if it's going to be the second yellow, I think that's a little bit harsh, but it is what it is at this point. So Rosales will be
I'm going to agree to disagree. I didn't think it was a second yellow, no matter, or a yellow, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think he kind of dove, but that's fine. Like I said,
that's
part of the reality of this sport. It's hard on these referees. And I think even the referees, particularly in this case, you know, the pro guys are coming back into their form because they've been out for a while.
Do you think, I know second yellows aren't reviewable by VAR. Do you think that should change?
It's hard for me to say. I think any red card should be reviewable.
Yeah.
When it leads to a red. I think, you know, the reality is there's so many yellows. I don't think yellows should be reviewable. So it gets that little bit gray area. So they reviewed this, though. They looked at it.
Right.
Because it led to a red. It just was one of those ones where, again, I don't think you're going to override yellow cards as easy as you're going to override red cards.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, like you just said, well, I thought it was a second yellow. Well, then what?
I was a little iffy on it. I could understand where the ref was coming from, but I also did think it was pretty soft as well.
Yeah. So they're right there. The VAR is there to, like, you know, overturn big mistakes, not,
right,
you know, these kind of subjective moments.
Right. So now moving on to Houston Dynamo. Obviously, the Loons will be without Yosef Rosales. We do have to mention that they will also be without Emmanuel Reynoso for the foreseeable future. The club did release a statement through Chief Soccer Officer Khaled El Ahmad saying Emmanuel Reynoso did not attend his recent green card appointment and he remains in Argentina. We do not have an updated timeline for his return and have no additional comment at this time. Our entire focus is on the players and staff who are here. And I think the guys who are here have played extremely well in absence of Emmanuel Reynoso, who normally is the best player on this team, one of the best players in the league, and it hasn't seemed to have affected them that much so far this season.
Yeah, I'm just going to support what Khaled said. And, you know, we've got a big game this weekend, and we've got guys in a group that have worked now for a couple months and are a couple weeks into the season, and every game's important. And certainly at home against Houston, a Western Conference foe, coming off a draw, it's a massive 3 points for us. So I think everybody in the club's focus is on us coming on the field on Saturday and pushing ourselves to get a result.
What's the impact of Yosef Rosales' absence? I mean, that's going to be a big miss with how the defense has already had to shift around with Miguel Tapias out for the last couple of weeks. Devin Pedelford moved inside. Now, conceivably, he's normally the fill-in at left back if Rosales is out. How does that affect what Eric Ramsey does this weekend?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm sure he's got a few options. And, you know, I think, like I said, it was disappointing that Joseph Red for me was incredibly harsh. And I was, like I said, I was disappointed that it was a second yellow by the ref. I don't think if he had a better day, he would have given that. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Ultimately, you know, there's going to be injuries. There's going to be moments in your season where you can't play with the 11 that you maybe want to, or for injuries, for suspensions. You know, we're going to get to a point here in a month or two where, you know, there's going to be guys who are going to be on five yellows that aren't going to be able to play. So ultimately, to me, this is another example of, you know, we got some adversity to deal with this weekend, and we've got guys that can step and improve themselves. And Eric is, you know, I'm sure preparing the group that he has available to compete. And again, I think that's just part of the game and part of the season of adversity.
So the Dynamo separated just by 1 point from Minnesota, sitting in sixth place on 10 points, Minnesota fourth place on 11. Dynamo had an incredible season last year, a bounce back season under new manager Ben Olsen, and winning the U.S. Open Cup. Incredible run for them last year, bounce back performance from them. Not so much this season. They've gotten off a little bit shaky. They did win three in a row, but lost last week against Chicago. Though there has been injuries that have affected them, and the biggest one, Hector Herrera, has not played yet this season. His return is imminent, though, so he could be back at any point this season, or any point soon. How much does he change the game when he's in the squad and when he's out of the squad? What does he do for Houston?
Yeah, I mean, he's a key cog in their team. Such a leader. You know, he's got these DNA of Atletico Madrid, and his ability to fight and battle, move the ball. He really is, you know, your kind of great two-way player that, you know, gets back and gets organized defensively, but then really wants to dictate the tempo, get in the ball, make good decisions, you know, get the ball to people who, you know, can get in dangerous spaces. So he's great with both feet. Somebody that, if he's playing this weekend, obviously it's somebody we have to be aware of, that is one of the difference makers in this league in terms of his ability to control the tempo and control the game. So I think they probably have missed him to start, but Ben Olsen is a very good coach, and they've been very competitive. And there's no doubt that, you know, they have other players in the field that played last weekend that, you know, I think, you know, we need to be aware as a club. You know, Karaskia has been outstanding. He's somebody that I think really combines well with Bossy for chances and chance creation. So the two of them offensively do a really good job, whether Herrera's in there or not. They certainly get elevated with Herrera, but they're very good. And then Adeleu has been just keeps getting better and better. He has provides some speed, provides finishing. You know, had a great goal last week in Chicago. So, again, this is a team that, like you said, won the Open Cup championship last year. They really were one of the more improved teams in the league last year in terms of where they were the year before. And there's somebody that makes it tough for us to play against no matter what. So, and Ben does a good job getting them organized.
Yeah, even without Hector Herrera in that midfield, they have, as you mentioned, playmakers. Karaskia, one of my favorite midfielders to watch in this league outside of Minnesota's midfielders. He's so dynamic on the ball and so fun to watch. His creativity is incredible to watch. But Artur and Jan Gregorius, former Loon, make an effective pairing in that midfield as well. I mean, that's a tough midfield that the Loons will have to go up against on Saturday. What's the
yeah,
key?
It is. It is.
Yeah, what's the key to getting better?
Artur and Gregos will sit a little bit more in front of the back four. I mean, they'll kind of hold the mm-hmm. fort. But it's good to see Jan back. It's somebody that, you know, we've known on two iterations of our club, and somebody that has had some great moments at Allianz Field for sure. So it'll be fun to compete against him, just like we did when he was at Nashville and San Jose, respectively. So he's done well. You know, they've had a lot of injuries. He stepped in and provided some consistency. And so we've seen those moments with Jan in our Loon jersey as well. So I think another one to highlight in the back four, Dorsey's done a really good job, particularly last year. Mm-hmm. He's probably one of the better attacking outside backs. I think that's an area where we have to be aware of for sure, that he'll try to get forward. He'll go forward, not only wide up and down the line, but sometimes he likes to come in and cut in. And certainly there's some space there to be had. If we have good shape defense and we work and organize, I definitely can get back at him in that space, because he tends to get caught forward quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always a tough matchup against Houston because they play so well. Ben Olsen had them so organized last year. Although we did see Timo Pukki's first goal, and what an incredible goal that was. Excellent pass from Reynoso. Great run from Pukki on that one. That was fun to watch. Hopefully we see something similar this week. And who's the biggest threat for Houston? Is it Karaskia? Is it Aliyu, who's continuing to just score goals? Scored what, 10 last year? Or not Aliyu, sorry. Bossy scored 10 last year. He hasn't scored yet this season, but he could come at any time because he's had plenty of goals already in his short MLS run.
Yeah, I think Aliyu probably is right now the more likely of those three to score, but Bossy scored a ton last year. I think the chance creation of Karaskia and Bossy right now, if it's the same lineup as last week, is really probably your creative force you got to deal with offensively. And then Aliyu's speed is impressive. And again, he'll be confident. He had a great goal against Chicago. Even though they lost 2-1, he played well. So for me, to your point, I mean, they're probably not firing in all cylinders with some of their injuries and up top. But we don't know. I mean, like you said, I mean, we're talking about last week's lineup. They might have two more starters that are in. We have to be ready and prepared to deal with them.
Absolutely. Plenty of other action across the league going on this weekend. Is there a game that sticks out the most to you? For me, the one that pops off the page right now is got to be LAFC Portland, just with the way those two teams have started, kind of right around each other in the Western Conference standings right now. Fifth for LAFC, 10th for Portland. They've been on a little bit of a downslope, have Portland, since their hot start, but LAFC getting that big win last week against LA Galaxy will change things for them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We didn't mention it, but that Portland Kansas City game was wild. I mean, that really was unbelievable. I thought, Portland's ability to come back and you know, at one point Kansas City had a penalty kick to go 4-0. They missed it. Portland got a penalty kick about a couple minutes later, and then that started to come back in the second half from 3-0 down to 3-3. So I think there'll be some confidence in Portland going to that game, that they've got a little belief that they can see results out. And I'm excited to see. What was the other one you said, Jonathan, that you're intrigued by?
Vancouver and LA Galaxy, two top Western Conference teams, first and second in the West. That's going to be an exciting one. That one caps off the night on Saturday.
Where is that? Is that a home or away?
That's in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably being a little harsh, but I'd rather have that be in LA on grass. If I'm going to, like, for top games I want to watch this weekend, I tend to probably rather have it be outdoors on grass, maybe my aesthetic side. So I'm not sure I'm going to give that one for me aesthetically, but for you in terms of the matchup, definitely a big Western Conference matchup for sure.
Philadelphia at Atlanta, another one on turf, unfortunately, but two top Eastern Conference teams. I'm just going to pick all the ones on turf for you just to just dig that one in. You got any predictions for any of these matches?
You know, I'm not good at predictions.
We're going to get you.
Yeah, you'll get me eventually. No, I could see Philly going to the Atlanta and getting upset. I feel like that might be, you know, one where they won last week on the road, right?
I think so, yeah. I'm going to have to remember. Yeah, it was against Nashville. They won 2-1.
Yeah, this could be a sneaky one where they find a result. Maybe 1-1, 2-2-ish, but maybe they get like a 3-2 result. I think Vancouver, LA is going to be 1-1.
Okay. Yeah. Not an easy follow-up for Columbus after they go on the road and upset Tigres in the Champions Cup in penalty kicks. Now they have to go on the road once again, altitude once again, Real Salt Lake. That's a tough one as well. There's some tough competitions here. Not easy for the team, the lone team in Major League Soccer left in CONCACAF Champions Cup.
No, and now it's a little bit more real, where they really have to manage where they're kind of getting their loads going. And is this a game where Wilfred says, listen, I love the league, but I might play some younger guys, keep some legs fresh. You know, there might be some him thinking about all of that. So no doubt. I mean, again, the one thing we always talk about with MLS, and I say this respectfully, you know, one of the reasons why I think it's one of the harder leagues in the world is because of the time changes, you know, three hour time zone changes, mm-hmm. like four different climates. It seems like all the time you're going to, you just mentioned, you know, five or six turf fields. And so it really is, you know, you've got to be week in and week out ready as a group, whether it's your top 11 or your top, you know, 18 to 22 players ready to contribute at all times and help your team get points. And that's a credit to the league that I think other people and foreigners don't realize when they come here, how much of a grind and really how big the U.S. is and how hard it is to travel and play and compete and win games.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not as easy as just rocking up on the beach and wearing your flip flops and coming over for a good time. You don't get to do that, unfortunately. But yeah, it's another exciting weekend of action, starting off with that LA Galaxy or LAFC in Portland match. But the one we're obviously most interested in, 7 p.m. pre-match, so 7:30 p.m. kickoff between Minnesota United and Houston Dynamo this Saturday, April 13th at Allianz Field. Manny, been good talking to you. We'll talk to you next week right back here on Match Day Preview.
I love it. I think 70 and sunny at Allianz Field. So let's get 3 points on a beautiful spring night.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Loons fans, thanks for listening. Thank you, production staff of Grace Searson, Kyle Hayward, and Evan Entler for putting this on once again. Loons fans, we'll talk to you next week.